Hey, this is Daniel. Thanks for listening to DIY Money. If you haven't already, be sure to give us a 5-star review on iTunes so your friends know that they can learn from the show. Now, enjoy the show.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of DIY Money.
DIY Money.
What's shaking, Daniel?
I feel like for 5 months we weren't on an episode together, and now, in short order, you've arranged it.
Correct.
That you could harass me two episodes in fairly short order, to repeat myself.
I think some of it is with Logan and Quinn out, there's no other options.
Yeah, a little bit of travel schedule.
So it is what it is. Yeah, can't avoid it, so we'll just embrace it.
It's fun, though. Mixing up the personalities.
A little bit. What's new in your neck of the woods?
Not much. No. It's spring season. Spring breaks. We're not going anywhere for spring break this year.
Do you usually go somewhere for spring break?
No, we actually try to avoid crowds. So we actually don't go on the very typical travel times. So we've actually never traveled for spring break.
Are you a summer, like sometime in the summer vacationer? When's your vacation usually with your family?
Between spring break and summer, when no one's vacationing because it's near the end of school year.
So like beginning of May?
Yeah, a lot of times. That's when we've gone. Or this year, we're going like the minute school gets out, we go.
And I said, kids, you remember when I said, where would you like to go this summer more than any place in the world, huh? What'd you say?
Why?
Shut up, Russ. Audrey, remember?
We usually take one trip with all of our extended family on my wife's side.
That's fair. And that's like graduation season. So a lot of people are busy doing grad parties for who knows which cousin graduated this year.
So hopefully the crowds won't be unleashed yet.
We were always a very, like, programmed fall break. We always went to Panama City Beach, and it was like clockwork. And we had the same restaurants that we loved. We would eat the same restaurants, and we'd lay on the beach. It was great.
Fall break is unique because not everybody has it.
Really?
I never grew up with fall break.
Is that just a Kentucky thing?
I have no idea. Kentucky is the only place I've lived that has a fall break.
But everyone has spring break.
To be honest, when I lived out west, it was a 12-month school schedule. And there was three blocks, so... Mm-hmm.
Three blocks?
So every block was having some type of break.
My mind was just blown in that moment. I don't even know what question to ask because I have so many.
Yeah, so think of a 12-month calendar. You don't get a full summer. You get like a little mini summer.
Right.
Each block gets a little mini summer somewhere in the year. And then you're taking like these longer, like fall breaks, basically, like spaced throughout the year.
And you liked that more than summer or no?
No, I wasn't in school for that area, but I knew of it because we lived in that city. So I'm just saying, like, as an example, that's the only other context. Because growing up, I just had the standard schedule, which was summer. And then you come back from summer and you run into a brick wall of going to school.
Yep.
All of a sudden in the fall in your new grade. And then you just hang on and hope for Christmas break. And then Christmas break comes, and then you realize now you just have a long slog all the way till summer.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
That's true, but normally, I feel like when I was in school, by like March, not only had the students given up, but the teachers were like, whatever, it is what it is.
Yeah, it depends on where spring break is.
All right, well, a few housekeeping odds and ends, and then we'll get into our question. This question and all questions sponsored by Joule Financial. That's J-O-U-L-E Financial. Check us out on the web if you have a unique situation and need some financial planning or financial advice. And keep those questions coming. Right now, we're really looking for junior questions. So if you have a bright young fella or fellow, then have them send in a recorded 1 minute or less audio clip to podcast@diymoney.org, and we will potentially use it on the show and give you a $25 Amazon gift card if we do. All right, today we've got a good question and a unique question from TC. TC, what do you got?
DIY!
What up, DIY Money team? It's TC from California. Wondering what your thoughts are on this credit card hack of sorts. After hearing your using credit cards episode, which was fantastic, by the way. Wondering if you think it'd be a good idea in an effort to help your kids establish credit to add them to a parent's credit card to assist them in establishing good credit. And I hear that you can do this and have them share your good credit score as they get to a point where they're applying for apartments and getting utilities and all this, just to help them establish credit. Wondering your thoughts. Thanks so much. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Bye. I liked that ending.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a great question, and I actually like it. When I was in high school, I had my favorite teacher. She taught calculus, and one day she just, like, stopped class in the middle of class and went on this, like, 45-minute rant about how sometimes schools don't always teach exactly what they should be, and we should really be talking about, like, credit scores and budgeting and things like that. And she started to, like, break down all of these random tidbits. And one of the things she told us, granted, I think most people in that class were probably 16 or 17. And she was like, the second you turn 18, go get a credit card. And she's like, just buy gas on it and pay it off every month and start building your credit score. And that blew my mind as a teenager, because I had no idea what that even meant, and I really didn't have a good grasp on how long it actually takes to build credit. I thought that was really interesting, so I like that you're thinking about this for your kids already, because I think a lot of parents are not. I know most people in the class had no idea what Ms. Smith was even talking about to a very minimal degree, so I like it. I think the biggest risk, I think it is beneficial, and you're right, I think it will add credit history for your kids. There's a lot of caveats, and I think it varies from what I could find card to card on if it actually starts adding to their credit or not. It looked like mm-hmm. some may not. And then when they can actually join, things like that. To me, the biggest question would be, do you trust your kid? Because yes, you're adding to their credit score, but on the flip side, you have to remember that they also have potential to add to yours. And if, as an authorized user on the credit card, they decide they're going to go buy a flat screen TV, you're now obligated to pay for it. And if you don't, it's also going to hurt your credit score. So I think this is a great tool and a really good tactic. It can be really helpful, especially because, you know, if you need 6 years to build good credit, you're going to start applying for apartments potentially when you get to college, depending on if you're going to live off campus. And it can be really helpful to have a credit score off the get-go. But I would caution you to making sure that this is more of a conversation and a learning experience, that you're not just adding them quickly and then handing them a credit card and just being like, oh, you're on ours, we're building you credit, don't think too much about it. That's what I would say. I don't know. What do you think, Daniel? You're
it's
a dad.
Good. I like TC's question on multiple fronts. The first is that inherently the question acknowledges the fact that credit exists and credit scores exist, and not just for the sake of, like, buying entertainment discretionary items. Like, yeah, when you go move out on your own, there's a good chance your landlord is going to run your credit score, and or, yeah, utility companies and various things. Like, there's a practical element of life in where, as much as you might want to live off of a cash basis and debit card only and stuff like that, like, when you're getting started out in life, you kind of need some level of credit probably. You're going to have a bit of a headwind if you have zero credit, I would imagine. So I like acknowledging that, right? Because there's a school of thought of, you know, just all credit's bad. Right. All credit's terrible. Never use credit. You don't need a credit score. And hopefully you get to a point in life somewhere along the line where, you know, maybe you pay off your house, you're buying cars with cash, and you kind of don't really think about credit anymore or your credit score. I mean, that's if you're doing the DIY money journey, like, ultimately that's where you want to get. But the chasm between starting out as a 18, 19, 20 year old trying to, you know, start out on your own to that, it takes time and building blocks and things like that. And credit is one of those building blocks. So number one, I like that. That we're at least acknowledging and bringing the essential for credit into the conversation. Two, I like the forethought of wanting to help get your kids set up responsibly. And I would parallel it to the way, as parents, we have to think about technology today. So technology exists. iPhones exist. iPads exist. the internet exists, social media exists. It's not a question of will the kids that are in our lives that we're responsible for in parenting have access to those one day and potentially use them. They will someday along the line. So the question for us as parents is how do you introduce the concepts to them and help them set a foundation of wise stewardship and management of those tools. So technology is a great tool. They're going to have to use it someday in life. How do you make sure they're not an idiot with it? And that's to sign and kind of introduce them into that somewhat slowly and in a controlled fashion to teach them the practical elements of wisdom around it and to restrain you sometimes and then to ease them into independence.
Because I have $30,000 in credit card debt. Credit card debt.
So if you're doing that with them with iPhones and iPads and things like that, then I see a great parallel there to doing a similar thing with credit card. Again, if your credit card company will allow it, if the terms and conditions apply and all that. Why not? Why not get them at, you know, 15 or 18 a credit card that you keep possession of like you would their iPhone at night maybe out of their bedroom or something so they're not like going on to Amazon and buying everything they want all the time. Hopefully they have not memorized their credit card number.
I have mine memorized, I'll be honest.
I do not. have the, what is it, the CIDs or whatever that you always have to type in to every single website. Those. But I think you can leverage it in a way of teaching them kind of how to use it, how to look at the bill, how to pay it off, how to budget ahead, things like that. But also control like, hey, it's not just your credit card to have in your pocket whenever you want to spend money. Like, you can have some cash in your pocket in case you need to buy lunch, but like, you're just not going to run up whatever you want on a credit card. We're going to use this methodically for specific purchases to build your credit, things like that. So I think there's some happy medium in there. We have not done this yet for our kids because our oldest kid is 8 and there's no reason to introduce them to credit. We do have like one of the kids' allowance apps where they have debit cards because we tried to start paying our kids' allowance and we always forgot to get cash. So we really wanted to like teach them cash and counting it and all that. And they actually do have some cash in their wallets, stuff like that. We were like, we don't ever carry cash. So like going to Kroger and pulling cash out on a grocery receipt and all that. And now Kroger charges you to do that. And it just got really annoying. So we just got the, I think it's the Greenlight app. So they each have their debit cards and then they do chores and then they get paid into their app and stuff like that. And practically,
some fancy stuff.
In 10 years, when that 8-year-old is 18, that's how he's going to manage his money anyhow.
Right.
So as much as you might love to do cash envelopes and budgeting that way and all that, he's probably going to use technology to do all of it.
Fair enough.
Might as well introduce that to him. So yeah, I think in that realm, easing him in, supervising it, parenting it, so that they don't turn 18, 19, 20 and get handed a flyer on college campus, sign up for a credit card, and screw up their life because they instantly have $10,000 in debt.
Right.
It's a fantastic idea. Not $10,000 debt, parenting them to not do that.
Yeah. Good idea, but make sure that you take time to explain the why and, like you were saying, parent them in it and monitor it and have conversations ongoing to dip their toes. I like it. Anything else to add?
I don't think so. They don't get into reward points. Those are all yours to keep.
That's true. If you're trying to get your
money,
kids out of
1%.
My goodness. All right. Well, great question, TC. Thanks for sending that in. We will send you a $25 Amazon gift card.
TC, nice to meet you.
Folks, the secret to wealth is really simple. It's to live on less than you make, invest the rest, and to do so for a very long time. Make it a great one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the show. If you want your question aired on the show, be sure to send that to us and you'll get a $25 Amazon gift card.
This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only and is not intended as personal financial advice. Before making any financial decision, please do your homework and consult a financial advisor as needed.